Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I just got to add Bill. We're starting early.
Yeah.
Are you recording? I had problems with my recorder last night, so I hope you are.
I am recording.
All right. Good deal.
I am not recording.
Do you even know what a recorder is?
It's one of those little flute type things you blow into, right?
I was going to be that exact same joke, yeah.
Which, the only reason I bring that up is because my daughter started third grade and that's what they're doing this year, recorders. So.
Oh.
So I'm going to be able to hear the beautiful.
Well, maybe you can. Maybe you can record an episode and release it.
I can recorder an episode.
Mm hmm.
Hmm.
So how are you doing, Micah? You've had a rough couple of weeks.
Yep, but it's doing better. Well, it was until I'm not sure if the air conditioning works or not. So I went outside. Something was stuck in it, so I removed it. But it hasn't been enough time to see if that was a problem or not. So
you removed an electrical part?
No, there was like a piece of plastic stuck in the can.
There was a shiv or something?
this piece of thing that rotates that keeps everything wet. No. You wouldn't have a swamp cooler out there. That'd be insane, right?
Yeah. Yes, that would be insane.
The cool pad that rotates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they even allow swamp coolers out there because they already have the humidity.
Yep.
But you're doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
All right.
I am woefully underprepared, but it'll be all right.
Underprepared?
Yes.
Well, I want to start this episode by talking about a movie that you guys made fun of, and I thought it was fucking awesome.
What?
Two Guns. I mean, I'll give you this. The preview.
I've only seen the trailer.
Yeah, technically we didn't make fun of the movie because we never.
No, we only made fun of the trailer.
The preview sucked. It really did.
It's really bad.
Like it makes you like. Not interested in seeing the film. There's like nothing there.
But 100%.
If you go see it, it is really like the comic with all the twists and turns that it has, and those two are great. Like I think you'll like it because you like buddy cop. While they're not cops, they're like buddies in this adventure. So I think they did really good together. But Two Guns, I recommend.
Yeah, I'd like to see that sometime. Despite the trailer.
I'll catch it on TNT.
Denzel and Wahlberg were really good. They were really good. And it's very close to the comic book.
Yeah, so you read the comic?
Yeah.
I never read it.
I actually, when the movie came out, I didn't remember what it was about. But I remembered liking it. That's the one thing I remembered. And I ordered Three Guns. You know, I pre-ordered it from Boom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I think it was last week, there wasn't really anything on. And I think Barb and I and my parents, my parents see all kinds of movies. That's what they do in their retirement.
Why not?
So they like pick a movie that they haven't seen. So they hadn't seen Two Guns and they wanted to see it. So we went to that movie and... Then my memory started to come back, you know, as soon as I started seeing it, what it was about. And it was really, really good. I'd highly recommend it.
I'm trying to see who wrote that. Oh, Stephen Grant.
Yeah.
Didn't know if it was him or Michael Allen, whatever his name is. The Boom guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns in it, and I remember when I read it from Boom, I really liked it. There's a lot of Boom titles that could make good movies. I mean, they're just kind of written for that.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if it's intentionally done that way or if it's just they seem to go for stories that are well suited to movies.
Yeah.
Like bigger kind of, well, boom, right? Big booming action type stuff.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, Denzel's not going to pick a movie that he thinks that he doesn't believe. Wahlberg will be in anything. He'll show up. You want me to show up? I'll show up. But, you know, Denzel's has a good track record. And isn't he an Academy Award winner, or is he a nominee? Yes.
I think he's a winner.
Okay.
Well, you figure both those guys can turn down stuff, right? They're not crying for work. So.
Yeah, but it had Edward James Olmos. It had some really big names in this movie.
Yeah. And it must have been a good script.
It was like, no shit. Like, I really think they really fucked up in the advertising, because in the advertising, you get no fucking clue what it is. Like, and that's what the magic of the movie is. Like, I guess maybe that's why you don't want to give it away, because there's so many twists and turns that if I said something, I'd spoil it.
Right.
Because that's what it is. It's about manipulation, and that's what's shocking about the film, is you don't know what to believe.
Well, that's when you do like a voiceover. You're the voiceover guy.
Yeah.
You don't believe what happens next.
What appears to be flat on the surface.
Or you put little quotes from people. I couldn't believe all the twists and turns. You will be blown away by two guns. Well, that's a good one. I'm gonna write that
one
down.
There you go. They should have had you do the voiceover. But it was really good. I think it's still playing at the theaters too. Like, it's, even though it had a relatively shitty opening, it has had a little bit of longevity, other than like some films.
Right.
And when we went like to the second feature in the middle of the day, and it was a pretty packed movie theater. And I think today, if everything goes well and work doesn't call, like they called yesterday and interrupted my, we were going to go see Where Are the Millers or whatever that thing is.
Right.
And got called right before. And I'm like, I don't want to be on call while I'm at the theater. So I'm like, we'll just move it to tomorrow. So hopefully.
You got a call saying you needed to come in, or that you might need to come in? Or
well, there was a big problem, and I might have to go in. I had to try to fix it over the phone, and if I couldn't fix it over the phone, I had to go.
Ruin.
Luckily, I fixed it over the phone, but it's not always that case. But so, what have you guys been doing?
Working.
That's exciting.
Working. Going to school. So going to school, studying.
Ah. What are you studying this year?
Japanese still.
Konnichiwa.
Sup. And then, yeah. Been busy.
Yeah, this week's going to be a short week because Monday we have off, and then.
Yeah.
Thursday, I have to leave work early, and then Friday, I'm in Baltimore.
Oh, right. Baltimore's this week, or weekend.
It's going to be awesome. We got CampbellCon on Friday night, and then the con on Saturday and Sunday.
Are there any people at the con that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah.
Like, creators?
Yeah, Keith Knudsen, creator of Brown Arrow.
Yeah.
Daryl.
A rare appearance.
Taylor, creator of Pajama Jeans Man. Chris Ivey, co-host of Geek Brunch Retro. Alan, Power Principal. There's going to be a lot of people there.
That's a party.
Sean Pryor. Well, I can't even name everybody. There's so many people. The Star Joes.
Yeah, one day I'll have to get to that one, but
it's such a short weekend though, because it seems like all the other ones you have 3 days, even though there's CampbellCon, it's pretty much like six to.
Is it only Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah. I don't know.
That actually isn't bad. because I would never be able to make it, because
well, 3 days.
They will, unless like you yourself physically die, they will. My job does not allow you to take off on a week where there's a holiday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they hate it. I mean, you can just not show up, and they won't do anything about it. But like,
even if you plan like weeks and
frown upon it,
like a year and like, well, yeah, because when I went up to Wisconsin last year, it turns out that like I took off like 3 days of a week that already had a day off on it or whatever, and they were like, I don't know, may not be able to do it. And I was like, listen, I won't be here, so you can.
I don't care if you can do it or not. I'm gone.
Like, I've already like booked the rooms and stuff, so that's what's gonna happen. But yeah, so I think that's Memorial Day weekend.
And I understand their position, but from the employee's position, you want to add on, you want to build off of a day off because it's like a free day
Absolutely.
So, but you could have taken like Friday off, right? Made it like a longer, or they frowned upon that too.
They frowned upon that too, but I guess they were more likely to allow that.
Yeah. Than to take a Tuesday, extended a day. Got to meet your productivity quota for the week.
Nah, they're just dumb.
What is the impact? Isn't it that they have to get out a certain number of teeth
and no.
by the end of the week?
Nope.
No, they're just dicks.
Yep.
Wow. Hey, you never know when a tooth is going to break.
If that was the case, we could just work harder the other day. Like, that's it doesn't make any sense, actually. So
you don't, I figure you must have, like, by the end of the week, you needed to, you know, hit your thousandth tooth. For the week or whatever.
Well, like, the problem is that it's a demand-based situation, so if there aren't that many teeth in the lab, we can't do that many anyway, so.
Then it's stupid.
I agree. But that's what happens.
You should punch them in the face and run out the door.
Not yet.
And say, can eat you on, motherfuckers.
Not quite yet.
Eat you all, bitches. Welcome to Geek Brunch.
Episode yes.
100 and...
Is it 89 or is 90?
89.
Okay.
As we come even closer to the big episode 200 celebration.
Yes. There'll be cars in the streets being turned over and trash cans on fire.
Absolutely.
And that's just in my driveway. The police show up. What are you doing? What do you mean, what am I doing? It's Geek Brunch episode 200.
So what you been reading?
Do you want to hear the true story of what I've read since, like, whenever I've been on last?
It's been a month. Surely you've read hundreds.
Let me guess. You've been reading some books about textbooks and maybe one novel.
Well, I've read a number of novels, but what I've read in the past month, a little more than a month, is I read the entirety of Dragon Ball, like the whole thing. So, yep, that's 42 volumes of manga, and I read all of it.
Is that Dragon Ball Z or what?
Well, in Japan, it's all just Dragon Ball. Like, there's no Z distinction. The Z came about because of the anime, because they thought they were going to end it, and then turns out it went on a lot longer than they imagined. In America, they do split it up between Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z if you're looking for it on the Nooks. Whoa, you can buy it through Barnes & Noble. You can't buy it through Amazon, like, as far as, we can buy the physical one through Amazon, but digitally you can only get it through Barnes & Noble or the Viz website. But, yep.
42 volumes?
Yep.
What is that about? A video game?
No, it's about
You don't know what it's about?
No, I don't.
How do I kick someone off of Skype?
You don't have to, like, it's just.
I thought it was like Pokemon or something.
Oh my goodness, no. Okay, no, so Dragon Ball is about this kid named Goku who grows up in the woods and is an idiot and eats a lot. And he goes on adventures and gets into fights. That's it. That's the end. It's actually surprisingly good. Like, that's why I ended up reading all 42 volumes of it, because I did not expect it to be actually as good as it was. The beginning of Dragon Ball is like a cute adventure story until you have like a very, very like small Goku who's living out in the forest, and just does stuff or whatever.
It's a kid who lives in the forest with his grandfather, and then his grandfather dies.
Yeah.
And he's this little kid, and he has a tail.
We don't even see any of that, like, of his grandfather or anything in the beginning of the manga.
The cartoon, it starts with him gone.
Right. Okay. Because I haven't seen the cartoon in forever, so.
Yeah, I watched it recently. Here's my story. I watched it recently because it's on, I don't know, Hulu or Amazon or something. And I was watching it with my kids because I was like, oh, you guys are like this. What I forgot is all the sexual references and the nudity.
It is. Well, they had the nudity on the, like, whatever version of it. I'm surprised they didn't edit that out.
They didn't edit out Goku's little baby penis.
Yep.
Or he's peeing.
Is that why you watched it? Did you, like, Google it? Google penis.
Penis. Cartoon penis. No, I got to save a search for that. Okay, you can continue.
So you've read Dragon Ball too?
I've never read it, but I watched the show back when it was on. And I watched a lot of Dragon Ball Z until I burnt out on it because it was just fighting week after week.
Yep.
What appealed you to it, though, in the first place?
I like manga. I mean,
no, but this is anime.
Yeah, I like anime too.
But it sounds like it's the same thing over and over again. Fight one, next level. Fight two, next level.
The beginning's not, because the beginning is just this story of this little kid with a tail, and he meets this girl, and then they're searching for these Dragon Balls. And he's learning about his abilities and stuff.
And they're learning anything about the world outside of his forest because he's never seen a car before and he's never seen like anything in the city. So,
what are Dragon Balls? They allow you to power up or something?
No, they give you a wish. You collect all 7 and you get a wish. A big dragon shows up and he's all like, I'll grant you one wish. And Bulma's like, all she wants is a boyfriend. And then this other dude shows up who wants to be able to meet a girl because he's all sad or whatever. But then they meet each other, so they don't even need a wish. Like, the way it works is Goku is basically like a high adventure story where Goku runs around like this world, meeting new people, going on adventures, doing stuff. Everything is really low stakes in the beginning of Dragon Ball. And it's funny. Like, it's highly hilarious. Big fan of the kind of comedy stuff. It's a bit skeevy at times because, lots of perverted jokes, like lots of them. I don't know, like.
So it's not for kids. Is that
no? It is for kids. It is for kids. No, it's totally for kids because like it's very rarely is it like it isn't like explicit.
Yeah,
there's lots of like poop gags. So kids like poop gags.
Oh, so it's like DC Noise.
Less explicit, less cursing.
The only stuff that's questionable for kids, or that I was kind of like, ooh. Was that Master Yoshi? He's a little bit the way he's like he's very skeevy towards Bulma.
He's like
this little girl in her dress.
Like 14, she's like 13, 14.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, and there's an early scene where because Goku also has never seen a girl before, which is it's like a funny thing or whatever. And so there's a scene and it's played for kicks because Goku can't be older than like 8 years old or something like this or whatever. But he acts like a 3-year-old. Like, he's a complete moron with, like, no brain power at all. And so, like, he runs up to Bulma while she's, like, laying out on the bed. And, like, gives her a good pat in the genital area, and then runs away like terrified because she doesn't have balls. This freaks his shit.
Doesn't he think she got it chopped off or something?
Yeah, he thinks she got. That's why, and she like that's why he thinks that. There's lots of jokes about Dragon Balls, like, and so forth about the dragon losing his balls, and I'm going to find it. There's very, very many of those jokes, but like, there's a cultural difference between I think what is acceptable for kids.
Come on.
Hello.
Last Micah. Call dropped. Are you there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, that was weird. Fuck yeah, Skype.
I used to like Dragon Ball. Is he coming back?
I'm trying to call him back.
I'm here.
We lost you.
Yeah, that was weird. I'm not even doing anything online.
Yeah, me neither. It happens all the time. It's every episode. Last time, me and Bill totally got disconnected.
Couldn't even reconnect.
We couldn't even reconnect. We had to reboot our Skypes.
But, yeah, so it starts off with Goku as a kid, and he's going on his adventures, and everything is super low stakes. And the stakes
get bigger as probably the volumes increase.
As the volumes increase, the stakes get bigger. What's the
bridge between Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z in the books? Because in the anime, it's pretty severe. Like, it's a totally different series, and the animation child changes, and he's aged and everything.
Well, the thing is, he ages in Dragon Ball. That's what, like, the thing, the reason why the Dragon Ball Z distinction is kind of stupid is because if they're going to make that jump, they should have made it, like, 6 volumes before they made it. Because the way Dragon Ball works is he starts off as 8 years old, and after, I don't know, 5-6 volumes, like, he ages a year, right? Like, he doesn't age a year. There's, like, a year jump between one chapter and the next chapter, like, all of a sudden. So, like, he gets older that way. And then, after the end of one of the tournaments, he jumps, like, 3 years older. And so, all this stuff keeps going. And then, after the second big tournament, he goes off and he ages, I think, five years. And so by this time, he's 17 or whatever. And when he's 17, 18, 19, somewhere in that range, that's when he fights Piccolo. And Piccolo's like a big green demon dude or whatever. And that's where the big jump in. And that's where you get, like, basically, that's adult Goku, and he doesn't change in design at all between there and the end of the series.
So when does it switch from...
It switches from...
Little boy in his adventure to him finding out he's an alien and...
Z is when the alien stuff shows up.
Well, we're in the manga.
It's volume 17 or 18. So you're like, yeah, it's far into it before any of the alien stuff shows up. But he's been an adult for like 5-6 volumes by this point in time. And then they show up or whatever, and then the alien dude shows up and he's like, "You're actually an alien, rawr." And then so him and Piccolo fight and they kill him, and then Goku dies. That's the other thing. Goku dies a fair amount in Dragon Ball. So, like, he dies at the end of, like, volume 17 or 18. And he has to go train for a year before they get the Dragon Balls and wish him back. So they do that, and then he fights all the people, and they win. And then he almost dies there, but he doesn't die. And eventually, they end up going into space where they fight him, and Goku doesn't die then. But he does die at the very end of that fight. And then he comes back to Earth later. And then there's androids to show up, and he's almost about to die, but then he doesn't die this time, so that's fine. The next big threat, he dies then, and then he stays dead until the very end of the series, where he's okay being dead because, like, everything bad happens when he's alive, and so he's like, "I'll stay dead, it's cool." Then he comes back to Earth for one day, and everything goes bad, so, like, there's a lot of dying. But like the thing is, there's lots of good character moments, even up, even like all the way through Z. Lots more character development than I think it's somehow ends up in the anime, even though there's a lot more stuff happening in the anime than there is in the manga. To a degree that I'd like reading the manga, it makes the anime unbearable. Like the idea of watching it again, I just can't even fathom watching the anime because of how much filler there is in there. The manga is quick. Like,
okay.
Like, there's not the thing where they power up for like pages at a time. Like that stuff is all anime induced. The manga is never slows down that way. Like they just jump forward to important bit, to the important bits.
Did you read it in Japanese?
Mm-mm.
That would have been a good homework assignment.
Nah, that'd have been a bit much. I'd still be on
the I still have the second volume.
I'm like, ah, I've read an entire chapter. Hooray. Each chapter being like 15 pages. So 2 months into it, I'd still barely be anywhere. But I actually just think Akira Toriyama is amazing as an artist. And like there are times. What's up?
Where did he fall in the timeline of creators?
He's like, mid-80s.
Did he originate some of the style, or was that already well established by the time he came around?
Okay, well, shonen, like the whole like boys manga thing was around, right? But he kind of flipped the game up or whatever in a way.
In terms of what?
In terms of pacing, in terms of art style.
Okay.
In terms of like well, it's one of those things where like there's a lot of stuff. Like, there's a lot of manga. There's always been a lot of it, right? But, like, Dragon Ball comes in, and Dragon Ball is more popular than a lot of things, right? It's basically, like, it's about the biggest manga there. Like, not totally in terms of sales and all that kind of stuff, but, like, impact-wise, like, everybody who's around now is, like, all, like, the One Piece and Naruto and a bunch of other stuff, like, all of them are basically directly attributable to Dragon Ball. People write for anime now. Like, One Piece is written for anime at this point in time. Like, the manga comes out, and they add in places for anime to fill in things. They don't... It's like... the way they do production is different. It's one of those things where, like, at the time, you could, like, you didn't know that, like, the whole industry was going to change after Dragon Ball. But if you look back on it, fuck, shit, like, 25 years later almost, then you realize that Dragon Ball really did change how much of manga works. That's what I'm trying to figure out when Dragon Ball started, because Dragon Ball is a lot older than I ever think it is, because like, I watched Dragon Ball Z in high school, but we got Dragon Ball way late. It started in 84. Dragon Ball started in 1984, and what I know is that when Dragon Ball started, Toriyama was already mega popular.
Because he had Dr. Slump before that.
Yeah, right? Dr. Slump, which is so different from Dragon Ball's, like the Z especially stuff. Dragon Ball, like Dr. Slump is nothing but like perversion and poop jokes. That's like all it is.
Right, that like, was more of a... It's just comedy, right?
Yeah, it's a pure comedy series. Those guys show up in Dragon Ball, by the way. And he's also... Like, Toriyama's done other things since Dragon Ball, but Dragon Ball went on from, like, 84 to 95. And, like, I swear I didn't hear of it until, like, the late 90s. So... It's one of those things where, like, mentally, it's hard for me to even fathom that it's older than I am. And
I remember when
it's still around. Shit. Still exist. That movie just came out last year. Like a theatrical movie. No, this year. I think it was this year.
That was one of the earlier... I guess that's not true. Maybe one of the earlier popular or animes that came to American television.
I know that Dragon Ball in America is responsible... Like, between Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon, like, that was... Like, that's responsible for, like... much of American anime fandom stuff. other anime in America, other anime were popular, but like in the early days, like I know like in the 70s, there wasn't like a celebration of those things being Japanese. Like,
well, back in the 70s, we didn't realize it was Japanese.
Right. You have no idea this stuff was being dubbed over.
Like, but there was popular stuff. I mean, Battle of the Planets was really popular.
But you had no idea what Gatchaman was, though. Like, that wasn't...
Right. And all the Force 5 stuff was popular.
Yep. But there's lots of stuff. Like, Yakuman was over here for a while. I forget what they called it when it was here. Like, it's the same. Like, it's similar to, like, you know, like, Ultraman was here and so forth. And different... Like, there's lots of been... But lots of different things that came over from Japan that showed up. But, like, in, like, the mid to late 80s, and then especially in the early 90s, that's when, like, the import scene kicked up in a big way. Lots of fan subbing, like, on VHS tapes, right? So, Dragon Ball was one of the first big fan sub things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was never involved in that, because that required more money than I was ever going to see in my life. Just to, you know, or you had to have lots of friends who were into anime in that very specific sort of way in the early 90s who would, like, give you tapes.
You could get them at cons, too, but you have to buy them.
Yes, you can get them at cons, but you had to go to, but like, you had to know that anime cons existed, or, like, or just fan cons in general, and I did not know that that was a thing until much later in life, so, yeah.
How many pages was that, is it a lot of action scenes and not a lot of words, or is it is it dense?
I mean, like, it's, I guess, medium. There's not, like, there's a lot of action, but there's a lot of words as well. Like, it isn't, like, it's not wordy, but it's not just straight action the entire way.
Typical manga size? Like, that digest size, or?
I mean, yeah. But I'm reading it digitally now, so they release them in the regular, like, manga digest style. I know it's 519 chapters, but I don't know exactly what the page count is, because some of the later chapters were longer, and some chapters range between normally 10 and 15 pages. So at a minimum, like, you're looking at 5,000 pages, but it's probably closer to, like, 6,000 or 7,000 total pages of manga.
It always sounds like it's a blast at your house. No, I mean, it just sounds like there's a lot of fun going on.
There's always activity.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. I'm not fighting, that's good.
Yep.
But it sounds like a blast. So, Bill, what do you got?
I was trying to figure out what my kids are talking about. Talking about superheroes. Batman. Okay, what do I got? I read... Jeez, what do I start with? I read some... I'll find some good stuff. Well, I finally read the first four issues of Todd the Ugly Boy.
The Ugliest Kid on Earth.
Todd the Ugliest Kid on Earth. Which I had read the first one previously, but I hadn't gone past that, so... And I finally read those, and it's very good.
And funny, because that one cop thinks he's the shit.
The old guy?
Yeah.
With the bowel problems?
And he actually sends the kid to prison.
Yeah, so those...
Full of adults.
Those who don't know, this is about... So it starts out, Todd is the ugliest kid on Earth, and he's so ugly that his parents make him wear a paper bag over his head. So he never threw out the book, and we probably never will actually see what Todd looks like, because he's too repulsive. And... So what happens? So he makes friend with his new neighbor who just moved in. At the same time, there's a serial killer going around killing kids and kills his next door neighbor. And then the killer is going to kill Todd, but Todd's too ugly to kill. But he gives Todd this doll that belonged to the girl who got killed. So this police officer who wants to be the hero cop and solve the big crime, says that Todd did it and throws him in jail. And there's no trial or anything. And Todd gets thrown in the adult prison, which is never explained or anything, which is why it's awesome. See, the good thing about this, like, it's very outrageous and unbelievable, but it's set up that way, so everything
and
works.
And the art really fits the story.
Yeah, the art by M.K. Perker is awesome. It's like, I don't know. It's like funny.
It's like a funny animated style, like you'd see.
It's like an exaggerated type.
Yeah.
But it's really nice, too. It's beautiful art. So then it goes, so that's the kind of the first issue. And then it goes on following Todd in jail and the situations he gets into, which are funny because Todd is this innocent little kid and he keeps meeting all these like gang members and murderers and stuff. And he doesn't understand what they're doing. So he's just having fun in there, even though they're doing horrible things. And then it follows the cop. So there's different storylines going on. There's one about the cop trying to find the real killer. And then there's the story about his Todd's parents, who his father is obsessed with this, like...
That's awesome. That's a
funny actress who's coming back to town.
His father creeps me out. I mean, he just, like, creeps me out to no end.
And then his mother, like, goes to this bar and has sex with men, apparently. But the whole thing, it's very funny, and one of the way it's funny is there's lots and lots of little jokes everywhere throughout the whole thing. So it's like just funny lines here and there, or funny little situations, or references to other things. It's really, really well written. So, and I also liked it because I thought the last issue was really good, and it didn't fall apart at the end. I thought it brought together the loose threads with the storylines and ended it in a satisfying way. So I was happy to see that, because sometimes the stories die out at the end. This one did not. So
that continues.
Yep, and now it's an ongoing.
And I think it's up for an animated series, isn't it?
Yeah, they have a deal with someone, Comedy Channel or something. Or Cartoon Network, I don't know. I think it's not out yet, but I know they're working on it, so we'll see if it ever comes to light. I think it would work, just because if they take the art style and apply it to the cartoon, it should work. Because it's an interesting, unique style that is very animated in and of itself, so it should work well. It should translate really well.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, Todd's awesome, because he's this kid with a paper bag on his head.
Yeah. All the characters are freaking unusual, too.
All the character design?
It's extreme. Like, I don't think there were any realistic characters in that. It's very fictional.
Yeah, everyone's...
Very fictional world.
Yeah, it's completely unrealistic, but it's funny. Yeah. People's heads are... Everyone's ugly, too. Maybe that's, like, one of the...
Maybe Todd is the one that looks really good looking under the bag, and everybody's like ugly.
Everyone else is ugly. Because I don't think there's anyone good looking in this whole thing.
Well, that soap opera star thinks she is.
Yeah, she wasn't that good looking either, though.
No.
Everyone's faces are kind of bulbous.
Cool. Well, I read a book that I think that you read as well. What was it? The Trillium?
Oh, Trillium.
Yeah.
The Jeff Lemire book. The new Jeff Lemire Vertigo book.
A flip book.
It was a flip book, but it was an interesting take on a flip book, I thought.
Yeah, it's... One side, you're in the past. And then one side, you're in the future. And you kind of meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good start. It has me interested, but I didn't think it was great.
Really? I thought it was great. I liked the future story better than the past story.
I agree.
But it seems to
be... I found the woman the most interesting.
Yeah,
because she's trying to find a cure for a virus that's spreading across the universe and killing humanity.
Yeah, I think it said... So, at this point, humanity has... been running from Earth away from this virus, and they've gotten to the end of some system where if they go any further, there's a black hole. So they're kind of on the last planet they can get to. trying to escape this virus, and I think they said they're down to like 4,000 humans. And they think the only cure for this virus is this flower that is protected by these native people of the planet, right? I guess it's on the planet they're on, right?
Yes. But they have like a black... It's a weird universe. They have like a black hole that's consuming the universe too. Like, there's a lot of weird shit happening.
And then, I like the future story. I like the way he set up the world. And they have like... It seems they have like artificial intelligence units that they keep on their wrists. And she's the daughter of apparently a well-known scientist. So she's kind of trying to forge her way.
And her timeline gets fucked.
Yeah, and then at the end she runs into the guy from the past. And then you flip it over and you read his story. Which his story, I guess, I didn't like it as much because I didn't really get a good read on him. Or I got a better read on the woman.
Yeah, I didn't understand the war part, how it tied in. And then all of a sudden he was on this journey back to try to find... It's the Incas, right? To try to find the mysterious temple of the Incas.
Right. The lost temple or something. Yeah, the lost temple of the Incas. Yeah, he has... It is kind of weird because it shows him in his present day, and then he's having like flashbacks of being in the war, which I'm not sure yet how that's going to tie into the story at all.
Yeah.
So there was a kind of a disjoint there, but yeah. So he's searching for this temple of the Incas, and then he runs into all the people in his party get killed, and he runs into the woman from the future. So it's very interesting, and I wonder is he. So now that they've met, is the next issue going to be a flip book, or is it just going to be one story now?
I think it's probably going to be one story.
Yeah.
I just got Collider number 2, and they changed the name on it. That was weird.
Of the book?
Yeah, it's called something different now. I was like, I don't remember ordering this. And I don't remember ordering number 1, because this title is just weird.
Right, all of a sudden you get a number 2.
Yeah, the title now is called F... B is in Bravo, P is in Parker, Federal Bureau of Physics, number 2. And I was like, well, I don't remember ordering number 1. What is that? And then I went and looked, and it has like Collider crossed off the top. And I looked at the little, the thing that is inside the book that tells you what the official title is,
mm-hmm.
which you're supposed to use for databases and such. It changed the name. I wonder what that was about. I wonder if there's another comic called Collider and they have to change the name.
They wouldn't have to change... They don't have to change the name. Because you can... Names are not copyrightable.
Justice League is.
Certain names are...
Collider, I don't see why it couldn't be. Champions was, because there was the issue with the Champions comic and the Champions role-playing game or whatever the hell it was back in the day.
I guess names, when applied to certain concepts, are copyrightable.
Now names in general are, in some cases, but I have a hard time believing that there has to be something else. Not just a comic name, Collider, that would be infringed upon, because that seems like a lot of effort to get someone to change the name of their book.
Yeah.
Yeah, they must have. The only thing I can think of is they didn't think Collider captured what they wanted to capture. We're calling it Federal Bureau of Physics. Lets them tell a bunch of stories with that unit of the government, you know? Kind of like a... What's that Hellboy one called?
BPRD.
BPRD.
Yeah, BPRD type thing. Where Collider really doesn't tell you much of anything.
I got caught up on Katana. And it's one of the few costume designs in the New 52 that I really do like. I think it was better than the previous. And I've been hit or miss. Like I think even on this show, I've said I'm not a fan too much of Ann Nesenti's new work.
Mm-hmm.
The shit is growing on me like nobody's business, because she's got like complex ideas and stuff and just wacky shit, and I'm starting to like it. Because like in the one of the first issues of Katana, it was almost like she was going to make love to her sword because her husband's in the Soul Sword. And right. I was like, this is fucking weird, man. This is just weird shit. And she goes to like this Japan town. I can't remember where it is. It's somewhere in the United States. It's like Chinatown, but it's like a Japanese culture. Maybe it's on the West Coast. And she goes there to try to take down this thing called the Sword Clan, who supposedly killed her husband. And in the old DCU, her husband, you know, she loved very much, and she lost her kids, and she wanted vengeance. And this one, somebody murdered her husband, you don't know the details, and she wants vengeance. So she's going after this Sword Clan and this guy called the Coil. And it turns into a weird, weird story, and this guy's art is just phenomenal. He only draws half the book, Alex Sanchez, and his art is just really, really gotten me into the book. And I'm more of a story guy, but I really do like his art style a lot.
How does he only draw half the book?
And then Cliff Richards does usually the other half.
Is it like a different story, or
no? It's the same story, but they blend well together. Like, if you don't concentrate, you can't see the different styles. They have very, very similar styles, except Sanchez has more of like a what is it, Jose Ripe, you know, type
mm-hmm.
line where he puts a lot of details inside the lines.
Yeah.
And there's only like it's not to the extreme that Wright does it, but it's there well enough that you can see it. And his art is phenomenal. But there's also this woman with tattoos like all over her body, and she's like creepy. And this woman is like, she owns like, it seems like a whorehouse, but I don't know if they flat out came and say it was a whorehouse. But this woman with tattoos, people go see her, not necessarily to have sex, but her body's tattooed with what's happening in the future. So she could, like, she's got tattoos that kind of predict the future.
Predict the future.
And recently somebody went in there and just hocked off her limb, like her full foot. And you don't know exactly what that says. And they're closing down the places that Katana works for, and they're just effing her up. And then you find out that this guy, Sickle, who's Meso's brother, who's her husband, they were like brothers that were both in love with her when she was very, very young. Like, they both loved her, and she chose the safe way. In other words, Maceo was the one that seemed to be more grounded in tradition and was the safer source, where the other one was more about adventure and taking chances and stuff like that. Well, she went the safe route. But then one day her husband says, we got to go kill this guy because of something. And it turns out her husband that she's been trying to save is pretty evil. It's crazy. And now she's falling in love with the brother. And they introduced Jack Ryder, who you know as the Creeper, back into the series. And this time the Creeper is more like a folklore demon that's inside the sword that escapes when the sword is shattered. The sword gets shattered, and she's trying to put it together. And the Creeper comes out and then animates Jack Ryder, who's kind of like a Mari Povich or one of those talk show guys, news reporters. That's kind of legit, but not. So it turns out to be a pretty crazy adventure. And I wasn't really on board with it, but man, I'm really liking her Catwoman too. And her Catwoman is so freaking bizarre. She turned it into an apocalypse in Gotham, a war between Catwoman and the gangs and Penguin. and it's insane. And then it just has weird twists. Like, you're like, what the fuck? She all of a sudden she goes underground, and there's like a whole village living in the sewers, and it's Dr. Phosphorus and his daughter, and they have like he has to marry another culture that's living in the sewers, and it just turns into freaking bizarre, but it is entertaining as hell. I don't know where she gets these ideas from, but they're definitely different. It's not traditional storytelling. So, yeah, I'm on board. And then I just wanted to say Trinity War. I finished that, and I liked it a lot. It did exactly what I thought it was going to do. It's an event that leads into another event, which is the Forever Evil event. But it's really well done because they tied it into Pandora, which I really love, and they tied it into Phantom Stranger, which is my favorite DC book. I mean, there's so much religion in that Phantom Stranger that I freaking love, man. Because it's about Judas trying to get redemption for betraying Jesus. It's crazy. What else you got?
So I got this. So at the last Wizard World Chicago, I picked up a couple books from this dude called. It's a comic called View-O-Tron. He had two issues. It was funny because I asked him about it, and I can't remember what he said exactly, but he said something to the effect of. He said, like, I asked him, like, what it was, and he said that number two's gotten a lot of good reviews, and I said, what about number one? No one liked it, and he kind of laughed and shrugged. But I got both of them anyway, because, you know, I can't just get. I pulled the Keith and couldn't just get number two. I had to get number one and number two. Can't start reading on number two.
You could have just got one.
I know. Unlike me, I actually got number two and then just get number one. Well, he said number two is the better one, so I had to get that. So this is I think it's self-published. Let me published by Viotron Press. Yeah, so self-published out of Chicago, so it's a local guy. The first issue is actually a split between creators. The guy who was at the show is Sam Sharp, and then the other story is by David Goodrich. So there was two stories in it, and I actually preferred the first story. It was like a weird story about this woman who's not happy in her relationship, and then she dreams that the toaster comes to life and has an affair with the toaster. It was kind of bizarre. And the artwork, it reminded me of someone, but I can't think of who. Which is bad of me, but I'm never good at figuring out what stuff reminds me of. But anyway, so yeah, it's a woman who falls in love with her toaster.
Kind of like Corn Boy, except there's a Toast Boy.
There's no kid, though.
Oh.
Then the second story was the one by Sam Sharp, and it's a parody of a... It's done in the style of Ivan Brunetti, who's a creator. Actually, there's a couple different styles. And it was weird. It was okay. It was decent. It was okay, but it didn't blow me away. But then the second issue was amazing and completely blew me away. The second issue is done all by Sam Sharp, and it's... I'm not sure if it's a true story or not. Or if he just made it up. Let me see. The scenes in this comic are all based on true events, but in some cases have been changed. Okay, so it is... I guess that tells me right there. So it's a true story about the creator, artist, writer, Sam Sharp, and his mother. Who... it starts out this kid talking to this other kid at a park about his... parents, his kid asks about his parents or whatever. Oh, yes, why his dad always drops him off and not his mom. And then he says, you know, my parents are divorced. And he says, what does your mom do? And she says, she can't work. She's sick. And she says, what's the matter with her? Does she have cancer? And she says, no, she has schizo. I can't pronounce it. It's a big word that means she's insane. So basically, his parents split up because his mom has schizophrenia. And then it jumps to... the present, or when 16, so He got letters from his mom that his dad would read to him, but they didn't make a lot of sense, and her handwriting was hard to read, and they didn't really tell a lot of personal stuff, so he didn't know much about his mom, and his dad really didn't talk about her that much. Said that they've been married for 12 years, but they never really talked about her much. And then, so this is just the first few pages of it, and then it starts where, when he's 16... he arranges to meet her. So then it goes on. It's the story that he meets his mom and he kind of gets to know her and deals with all the stuff that she's going through and how he reacts to it, you know, like what it's like to have this mom that it's hard to connect with her because she has these mental problems. So it's really like a serious take on it, and it's not a difficult read, but I give a lot of credit to the creator for like capturing this and putting it on paper, because it's pretty amazing read. So highly recommend it. And the art's really nice too. It's all anthropomorphic. So he's a dog and his mom's a dog. I think actually everyone in the story is a dog.
Is this Vuotron?
Yeah, Vuotron.
So there's two stories in there is what you're saying.
The first one, there was two stories, but then the second issue is just the one guy.
Oh, okay.
It's all this personal story about him and his mom.
Is it like every story's different? Like you don't have to read one to read two? Or
right, two, yeah, they're completely different. This two is a completely standalone personal story, whereas the first one was not a...
fiction.
Not autobiographical, yeah. So... yeah, it's weird that he chose to release. I mean, I see why he released this as issue two, because he has this series, but he could have just brought this out as a standalone. It might have been better served just to bring this out as a standalone story.
Is it standard comic size or mini comic?
It's kind of between. It's smaller than a full size, but it's not half size.
Is it color?
It is black and white, color cover. But it's really nice, so I'm not sure if this guy makes appearances anywhere, but it's worth checking out, especially if you're interested in the concept. It's really, really well done. It's excellent. 5 out of 5.
Oh, Vuotron.blogspot.com.
There you go.
It says some of his stuff is for free. So I don't know if this is the same.
I don't know if he has this online, but I'm sure you could go there to check out his stuff.
I got a Kickstarter in the mail that was an all-ages comic that I thought was pretty damn good. It's called The Adventures of Arrow Girl from Dwayne Fenstra, who I think I've been following on Twitter forever, and that's how I found out about this. And Alex Enos is the artist. And this is their first book about a superhero daughter that her father's like protective. He's a superhero too. And she's actually exceeding all his expectations and ready to do her own thing. But the mother's like, you can't let this. The mother wants to keep her away from the superhero stuff because she's too young. I think she's like 8 years old. And the father thinks she's ready, but he's playing on the conservative side. And the way it ends is, it almost ends like the father could be possibly dead or crippled or something, and then the daughter has to take over. But it's really well done. It's a pretty cool art style. It's very cartoony. The faces are really wide. They have cool villains like the Bearded Lady and Strong Man. They're like from a circus of crime. And I enjoyed it. The character designs are pretty awesome. It's something that I would continue to get. Like, I just hope it the next issue. This is listed 1 through 4. It's also a smaller comic. It's about an inch shy of the normal size, I guess, and then a quarter of an inch shy on the
It's probably the same width. Size as the That's about what this view of Tron is.
Yeah. But this is all color, and it was really well done. I don't know if this is their first comic or what, but I enjoyed it. I like Kickstarters. I just wish they weren't so damn expensive to get a print copy.
Hopefully. I noticed, so more and more I've been seeing this in comics where I'll get something, and then I'll look in the like front of it or the back of it, and it'll say, like, we were able to release this through our Kickstarter. And it's like, wow, it's like half the books I get seem to have started through Kickstarter now.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool to start these books, but then when you see it solicited by Image or something later, you're like wondering, well, I could have got this print copy if I just waited another couple of months. Right. And
that's what, like this one,
I could have got it for $2.99, whereas this cost me $8 to get that plus a couple of bookmarkers or something.
Right.
It's a weird game you have to play because you don't know for certain if you really want that book and you don't get it through Kickstarter, that book may never exist. But then if you do, there's a strong chance that depending on who the creators are and how popular the Kickstarter ends up being, that 2-6 months later, there it is out on Image for $2. So
right, yeah. And sometimes they say like there's one that's up now, and I can't remember. Oh, son of a bitch. I can't remember the name of it, which I should be able to. Hang on. Now I got to go to Kickstarter to find out. But anyway, it's a book that's coming out. It's a collection. Alec Longstreth's new collection of his books. I don't remember. Or his graphic novel. I don't remember what it's called. He's bringing out a hardcover, Basewood, that's what it is. He's bringing out a hardcover collection of the stories that appeared in his self-published comic. And in it, he says that he explicitly points out that he has a deal with, I can't remember, Top Shelf or something, that they're going to publish, or Adhouse is going to publish it if the Kickstarter is successful, so. Which is, I like that he said that, because basically saying if you want to wait, you could probably get it for cheaper, but
you take a risk that it might not be published if it doesn't succeed.
Right, if it doesn't succeed. So, and he also says, I don't know how much it's going to cost. Sometimes I have seen cases where it's actually been cheaper to get the Kickstarter than the actual book because they've given you a deal on the book itself.
Those are nice.
More likely for bigger things than the single issues. Single issues, they usually charge you way more than it's going to cost.
But sometimes hope for those. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes with the hardcovers, they'll give it on Kickstarter for like $25, and then later you can order it for like $30 or whatever.
Yeah, my hope for the ones where the single issue is so expensive is that because like that's the only way the only means they have of producing it. They're probably doing it themselves. $10.
This one was definitely by themselves. I don't even see like a publisher. You know what I mean? They didn't even make up their own publisher name.
Yo, my cousin works near a place that knows somebody who has a printer, so we went over there and did it ourselves. With the Kinko's, just got it done.
Whatever it is, it was really professional. Like if
yeah, there's printing places now.
If they took this and handed it to a publisher, I think they'd be impressed.
Yeah.
And that's probably part of their better.
Really well.
Like, I got staples. Like y'all are paying for me to go down to Kinko's and get some staples together. Y'all are gonna get a real handcrafted book. Each book individually hand drawn. $30 a piece.
Now nowadays there's places you can go to, I don't know, what do they have? Lulu or
no, I think they're dead. No, they used to be alive, but Apple bought them and killed them. No, that's Lala. Never mind. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, Lulu still exists.
And there's that other comic something that comic something or another.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to go. Oh, and I read another post-apocalyptic book.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was called Debris, and it's by I think Kurt Wiebe or. I think that's his name. He did that Grim.
God, Green Wake, right?
Did he do Green Wake too?
I thought he did.
Well, I didn't care for Green Wake, so I didn't finish it. But I am a Rossimo fan, so like I'll tend to get his books, just based on art, this story was pretty good. I mean, it was very simplistic. It was 4 issues. I read the trade. I bought the trade once I saw that I missed a Rossimo book. And it's a post-apocalyptic world. And it's
debris? Why didn't I get that?
It's very weird because all of the monsters, like these huge worms that come out of the ground and these huge birds, they look like they're technically created. Like they don't look like organic at all. They look like they have machine parts and stuff like that. But anyway, they're attacking this little, I guess, community that's been there. And the community struggles a lot because they have to fight off these worms. And they like have these protectors. And the way this series opens up is you have one protector that's been there, a female that's been there forever, that's kind of giving her mantle to a young protector, and she's going to just take over. So, and that young protector's pretty badass because she was able to take one of the huge worms down by itself. And then they have this huge gun. It's only got 2 bullets. But I guess it's rumored that when you use the last bullet that you won't ever have war again. Everything will be peaceful, but you got to use it at the right time. The one older woman uses 1 bullet to protect the town from getting crushed, but they lose the water source. So they like have different cultures, I mean different castes in the community, and one is to like, okay, you're the farmer, you grow food. You're the ones that do this in the well and you create water. And then you got the protectors, or you got one protector that's like the one that can train everybody and is the leader of the protecting them. And then you got these warriors that they're kind of like stormtroopers that try to protect the town, but they ain't worth the shit. Like they're not at the level that the one protector's at. But the one older woman dies trying to protect the town, and they knock out the water source. And they're like, she says, "You got to find this imaginary town, even though it might not exist. You got to go look for it because we're gonna run out of water and die." So she has to go and find it, and it turns out that it was their own culture that had segregated from that had left that culture a long time ago because of some political battle, and they've been creating these creatures to destroy the people that were in this colony. So it was like they all came from the same colony, but found out that this colony was out to destroy them for segregating or separating from the colony. But it was pretty cool.
Sounds good. I actually did read it. I just forgot about it.
Yeah, I like the art. I like Rossimo. I mean, I pretty much buy everything Image, but I must have missed that. That must have been before I started. But I'm starting to double think, like, do I need to buy everything Image? Because this next previews had like 12 new number ones. I'm like, motherfuck, man.
They're abusing their,
yeah. They're making me change my mind. When you got one or two, it's not a big deal. Put like 20 books, 2 million number ones.
Are you afraid of that from Valiant as well? Whenever they decide to up the line, like when they double their line in like a couple months,
they're not really doubling it. They're putting out Eternal Warrior and Unity. So
I thought they were gonna keep adding. I thought the plan was to keep adding more books though as they kept going.
No, I originally thought they're gonna do a hardcore, but they moved hardcore into Bloodshot, so now it's Bloodshot and hardcore. I think they're doing it at a slow pace.
Yeah, they're doing just like one or two every 6 months or something.
A year, and they haven't canceled anything yet. But if they don't watch it, they could get in some kind of trouble because they're not selling gangbusters. Like, I think Harbinger Wars was like their biggest selling book ever, and it was like, you know, 15,000 copies. So,
do we know how they're doing on the digital though? Like, are they being able to make it up?
Well, I'm sure they have those 99-cent sales that are fucking awesome. Like, you could all that's when I like quadruple dip, and when they have those 99-cent sales, and then I just have them on my iPad too, especially for the older stuff. That's what I I want to get on my iPad. That way I don't have to dig through my long box. But that's pretty cool shit. And then I read, oh, this one was interesting. I read Grimm Fairy Tales Oz. That was really good.
I read that one.
That one sucked me in.
I didn't read that one. Wait, Grimm Fairy Tales?
Yeah, Grimm Fairy Tales Presents Oz.
Okay.
That one I really enjoyed. And I like the art on that one, because usually the art inside is sometimes fairly weak.
Yeah.
And the art inside was pretty damn good. So I liked Oz a lot. And then I read No Tomorrow. Oz was... Do you remember who did that one? Grim Fairy Tales Oz.
The writer?
Yeah.
Joe Brucia.
There's like four writers. Raven Gregory, Joe Brucia, Pat Shand, and some other guy. They pretty much write the whole damn line.
Yeah.
And they rotate sometimes within titles. And I really liked Oz, which is weird because I didn't like the Big Dog Inks Oz. So, but I like this one. And then I read Grimm Fairy Tales Presents No Tomorrow. And what was more interesting about this one is the back matter. But No Tomorrow is kind of about like death. Or what was that movie where the airplane was crashing? Final Destination. The Final Destination movies. It's kind of like in the vein like that, where death comes to visit a certain area, and if you escape, they might come back after you. It's kind of like that. What made this really interesting is, I don't know if you guys heard from the interwebs that Raven Gregory, who has four kids and a wife, his wife got hit by a car.
Mm.
And she died. So he actually lost his wife. And they had like he had a dedication in the back for her. And it is really depressing, but it seems like he's able to cope with it. But
didn't he have like drug problems in the past?
Yeah, that's what Fly was based on.
Jeez,
so he's had a kind of rough life.
Got beaten up, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, but to lose his wife, somebody hit her with a car and she died, and now he has the four kids that he's having to deal with, and it's kind of a depressing little story. And then to have to write a book about death, which is kind of like No Tomorrow. That's what this is about, which I liked. But the thing that made this book suffer is the art. It was just, It wasn't very good inside. But yeah, I'm going to keep up with No Tomorrow. So I'm getting, I think, four Grimm Fairy Tales books now. I'm getting the main one, which I've always gotten. And then I'm getting Oz, No Tomorrow, and then a book that Tyler Kirkman's doing called Screwed.
I read the first Screwed. Well, Tyler Kirkman is he doing anything on it, or did he just create it?
I think he did the first issue and then switched.
He wrote the first issue.
Yeah, and then
co-wrote it.
And then co-wrote it, and then the other teams took over, and now he's just doing the covers.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first issue. What was the concept there? It's like a Frankenstein type guy, right?
I didn't read number one yet.
Okay.
So they're already up on number four, but that one's a mini. That one I know is like five issues, so I think it's almost done.
Wait till it finishes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read the first one of that one. I don't remember exactly what it was about, but I enjoyed it.
So even though they have cheesecake covers, some of these books are pretty good. Like, I like the cheesecake covers because that's what sells me on the book to begin with. But to have a good story inside, the only thing that might be disappointing is it's got, I hate to say this, but some of the titles have like generic looking art. Like, it has no distinctive, I don't know how to say it.
It looks like a assembly line.
You got it. Like an assembly line that looks the same. and has no unique style to it.
Yeah.
It just like pumped the book out.
Comic book art. It's like generic. No, it's generic comic. I think it's what Mike sees when Mike looks at manga.
Like, there you go. That's what I see.
I think that's what it is. I think a lot of it.
No, manga looks distinctively different. Like, if I look at Dragon Ball Z and I look at. I was reading. Was it Monster? Monster. And if I look at. I was reading some other one, detective cop drama, where they were killing people by planting flowers in people's brains. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then planting the people in the ground. But the art is very different. The eyes are the same. the eyes are a lot and the same in the way they draw action with movement is the same usually. But the styles are distinctively different. And then you have to read backwards, which just doesn't help at all.
You didn't have to read backwards in that really weird phase in the 90s where like they were bringing over manga and then putting them in comic book form.
Yeah.
That was
occasionally
weird.
Occasionally they still do that.
They still do that?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, I can't remember if it was Monster or the other one. Or I actually read... I didn't see the little thing in the back that said you're supposed to read this from back.
Stop.
So I read from front to back, and I was like, God damn, this thing makes no fucking sense. Like it
that was a really weird reading experience.
Yeah, and I read from left to right instead of from right to left.
So you read every panel backwards?
Every panel backwards.
That's incredible.
And I made it through, but then I was like, I don't like this shit. I don't ever want to read it again. And then I got to the end of the book, and I flipped the last page over, and I said, God damn, I'm glad I'm done with this. Closed it, and then I read the little disclaimer, you're supposed to read this from back to front. And then I said, oh my God. But because I wanted to give manga a shot, I read it back the other way.
That is so great.
And then I never returned.
And it was better backwards than it was forwards.
But I've only read three, and I just don't... It's not that I just don't want to give it a chance, I guess. I already have enough to read and to get into another thing. I don't know.
Plus, they're mostly released in graphic novel form, not comics, so...
Yeah, well, and I think I have like
individually far away.
A comic book,
magazines.
Like ADD thing, and comics fits that pretty damn good to get 32 pages and be done. 32 Quick pages fix. And be done, yeah. And I like to jump all over the place, like, oh, I want to read a Western. All right, 32 pages. Oh, now I want to read a horror story. Okay, now I want to read this. It fits that. Whereas manga, you're reading volumes like you're going to read a novel or something. But, and the last one I read was John Carpenter's Asylum. This was it's about a devil possession by Bruce Jones, who's a famous horror writer, like him or not. People hated his Hulk run and some other stuff he's done, but I've liked his horror he's done. And this is from Storm King Comics. But it had Leonardo Manco's art, and I like his art a lot. But I'm continuing with it. I added it to my pull list. I saw it on the shelf, and I was like, what the hell is that? And I like horror, so I added it. The other one that I like a lot that is Avatar, which I buy it, is George R. R. Martin's Skin Trade. That's turning out to be a pretty cool story.
I still need to read that first issue.
There's not a lot. It's more of a... There's not a lot of like sex or anything in it, like a lot of their other books. It's kind of like a straight werewolf tale, it looks like. And then Action Lab's The Final Plague, by far my favorite Action Lab book to date, by J.D. Arnold and Tony Gerardi Brown.
I have that, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I love the art style. It's really dark. It's a little bit in color, but not quite. It's kind of like a plague that's going or transferring around from rats to dogs to cat. I mean, it just infestation, man. And it's really creepy the way it's told. I like it. It's well executed.
Cool.
Any other comics, guys?
No.
All right. We could talk about TV. Anybody watching TV?
I watched a show.
What?
I watched this show called Crossing Lines, and I liked it.
What is that one? Is that a regular network one or something?
It's a regular network. I think it was just a summer show, and I don't remember. I have no idea what network it was on. Let me do a search. Crossing Lines, NBC. So it's an NBC show, and it was a summer show, and it only had like maybe 10 episodes. It was like a shorter season one, but it was really good. It's a cop show, but it takes place in Europe, where there's this agency. I can't remember what the name of the agency is, but basically they do cases that cross international or national borders. So cases in Europe where there's a crime going on where the criminal is going from country to country, where, because in Europe, I didn't really think about this, but I guess if you're a criminal, it'd be easy to commit a crime in one country, jump to the next country, commit a crime, jump to the next country and commit a crime. And it's going to be hard for them to find you because those countries probably don't talk to each other very much, right?
Mm-hmm. Easier than, say, Australia. Yes.
Yeah, Australia where, yeah, you're in trouble.
Yes.
Or even America where you can really do it, big. But it's going to take a while.
What's happening in Australia? I'm not aware.
Nothing. I'm just saying that, like, if you were in Australia, it's hard for you to commit a crime and then jump to, like, another go country. To New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Then, because you're isolated.
You're out of luck. Yeah.
Get on a boat or something.
Right.
Yeah. So this team looks at cases that are like that. So if there's a, like, they dealt with one where there was some murders happening in different countries and they seemed to be similar, so they were investigating it. So you have, it makes it interesting because all the actors are from different countries. Like there's a girl, she's Italian. There's an Irish guy. There's a couple guys are, I'm not sure where they're from, but everyone's from somewhere else. And of course, then they have the American guy from, the main character is the American from New York, who he was a cop and he was going after this bad guy. And he got shot in the hand, and now his hand's all fucked up that he can't use it. So he got kicked out. I don't think he got kicked off the force, but he basically got a desk job because he couldn't work in the office. And I think he quit because, he developed a drug problem from the pain drugs for his hand. And they have, and the show also has the leader, kind of the leader of this team, is the awesome Donald Sutherland, so. And he's always awesome.
I always think of him in Animal House where he's walking around with no pants. I don't know why, but
that's the one you
that scene that that what I remember Donald Sutherland for. That's not a good scene to have in there, but
in his resume. So, and it kind of follows the crimes that they're dealing with. But it's really well done. I enjoy it. So, it was a good little... I hope that gets picked up for a regular season series.
Well, I watched Under the Dome. I'm all caught up on that. And I really like the show. Like, I really like the plot and I like the story. I just can't stand the acting. Like, it's like there's some like things that are just horribly bad. At least to me, that kind of take me out of like enjoying the show, like I do other shows. But I'm still intrigued by what's going on. And I'm still enjoying it. And the main guy that's the corrupt politician, I never even realized, but he's the guy from Breaking Bad. The only thing I realized was I'm getting hooked back into Breaking Bad. Like, me and Barb watched 3 episodes in one night, and that's very odd for me because I get distracted and want to read comics. But I, like, got hooked and had to watch one after another to find out what happened. And we just completed season 2 of Breaking Bad, and that show's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to start watching that one. I added the season 1 DVDs to my queue at the library, which that it goes to show you how popular a show is when the first season of something that's been around for years is there's still a wait for it.
Yeah. And I don't know other than TV wise, I'm not watching too much.
I started watching that Following TV show with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, what'd you like? Did you like it?
It's okay, but I don't know if I'm going to watch the whole thing.
You know what I'm finding out? And I think it's because of my short attention span. I really like short seasons, like True Blood short. You know what? Do you see what I'm getting at? Like, yeah. Spartacus was short. And then it ends, and then I'm interested to follow the show into the next season. But when it's like 20-some episodes, or I like lose interest. I do. Oh, and this new channel called Pivot, I don't understand what it is. It's the weirdest channel ever. But it like shows Friday Night Lights almost 24/7. We're watching the second season again, and that's the weirdest season ever. Like,
It is.
And we like go back and we're like, wow, that happened? And
yeah, that scene was messed up.
It's like totally entertaining. And we were just watching the episode where Buddy takes on that one criminal dude because the one cheerleader becomes all religious and starts preaching to the people that are getting out of prison. And Buddy takes in that kid Santiago. And I was like, Barb, I really loved that Santiago character. Like, he was like a guy that came out of prison that was a defensive dude, and they never focus on defensive dudes. Like, it's always the offense, you know, Riggins, the fullback, and it's all the offensive guys. And this guy was an awesome defensive dude because he had a lot of anger built up, and he would hit people like nobody's business. And I was like, this is awesome. What happened to Santiago? Because I can't remember. Barb's like, I don't remember either. So we like went on to Google it. And they like wrote him out of the show. He just like vanished.
Disappeared.
He just disappeared from the second to third season. And then we were like, what? Why was the second season so weird? And that was the writer's strike.
Yep.
So it was like, man, they really did some crazy stuff. That's where they had the murder with.
That was seriously like a dark season.
Yeah, it was just was just weird. And then what's his name went to Mexico to try to get a surgery on his spine.
Yep.
I'm like, what the hell? But you know what? I still loved it. So
yeah,
I pretended this. If I was gonna rewatch it, I would watch all of season 1, and they come in like season like episode 8 or 9 of episode 2. and then move on from there.
But the cool thing was, like, season 3, like, picked it back up again, like, where
like it was
season 1 left off.
Yeah,
basically, season 2 doesn't exist.
They almost wrote it off. The only thing that I really liked in season 2 that I wish they would have pursued was Santiago, because I liked him. And then the other thing that they did is Smash. They built a relationship with Smash and his mom in season 2 that is like awesome. Like, Smash's mom makes a lot of appearances. I just freaking love their relationship. Those are the two highlights of season 2. The rest is kind of, it's crazy. And then what's her name breaks up with the quarterback, and then she starts dating a guy that's at the pool, and he's like a drug dude, and then she dumps him for a teacher. She starts, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird season. I love Friday Night Lights, though. It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Top 10. Actually, I have a good follow-up to that. I watched a movie. Oh, son of a bitch. I have no idea what the movie's called. Hang on, I got a. Oh, man. Undefeated. I think it might be called Undefeated. You ever heard of this movie called Undefeated?
No.
Son of a bitch. Hang on, let me jump onto Amazon here and look up Undefeated and make sure that's what it's called. So it's a documentary about, yeah, Undefeated. So it's a documentary about a football team. There was a pretty, I think it's a well-known football team in...
the Miami Dolphins?
No,
the high school. Okay.
North Memphis Masonis High School. So it's the story of, there's this high school in this really bad part of Memphis where years ago there was a Firestone plant and that went out of business. So now it's largely abandoned and falling into whatever, poverty, etc. And it takes place at this high school where for the last 6 years, they've had this volunteer coach who's trying to build up the football program because I guess in the state, this team was pretty much like the lowest of the low, bottom rung, losing all their games. So he's trying to rebuild the team and help the kids find a direction in life, basically. So it follows... It's a documentary, so it follows this is his sixth year there that they're following, where he's been building up the team, and they're actually pretty good now. They're actually winning games, so his goal this season is to try and win a playoff game, because they've never won a playoff game before. So it looks at several of the guys on the team, the kids on the team, their lives, and kind of where they're at and where they're going and stuff, and follows their season, so they show, you know, parts of each game and the scores and et cetera, et cetera. And it's really good. It's really well done. There was one part of it that I've actually, when I saw it, I remembered seeing it before, where there was one kid on the team called O.C. I can't remember what his last name is. O.C. Brown, who... He got a lot of attention at one point because one of the coaches put together a compilation tape and put it up on YouTube, and it was like a YouTube hit of the week for a little while. And it was one where he's like a big guy, but he's really fast. So he put it up on YouTube, and it got tons of hits, like millions of hits. And I remember I actually did see that clip before on YouTube before I saw this movie. I was like, hey, I've seen that one. So this kid, he's just in high school, and he's really good. And he actually, at the end of the movie, he got a scholarship somewhere and went off to play college ball. So it's like real world Friday Night Lights.
That's cool. I wonder if that's on Netflix. I'd be interested. What's the name of it again?
Undefeated. Mm. And it's cool too because this dude, he owns like a lumber yard. Like, he owns the company that, you know, whatever, makes lumber. And he's doing this is a volunteer job for him, so he's not getting paid. And it's actually keeping him away from his family, but he's doing it because, I guess, his love of the game and that he wants to help these kids. And the guy reminds me, he kind of looks like Buddy in Friday Night Lights. That's what he reminds me of.
That's another thing that happens. Buddy has that affair with Tara's mom.
That's right.
I'm like, holy shit, his wife leaves him. This is crazy shit, man.
Actually, the coach in this movie was a car salesman at one point before he started his lumber yard. So it's like, he's Buddy. It's like a buddy volunteered at a high school to coach the team. And if he actually cared about the kids. I think Buddy just cared about winning. He cared about the team.
Yeah.
Not about the kids.
Not so much.
So I recommend that. It's good.
I got three more movies. End of Watch, which is on Netflix. It's a streaming. I don't even remember this coming to a theater. But
I've heard of it. Jake, I have no idea what it is.
I remember the trailer.
Jake Gyllenhaal or whatever his name is.
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal is probably the biggest actor in there. It was a good movie, man. It was Daryl's pick of the week, and me and Barb really enjoyed it. Like, it's about two cops in this corrupt part of LA, and for they have this fascination with recording everything. But it turns out they're pretty heroic in their own terms, you know. And it is dark because they get involved with like the Mexican mafia down there, and they don't mess around. they broke up some of their human trafficking stuff, and they did some other stuff that caused them a lot of delays and pain, and busted up some of their drug things, and it doesn't end well for them. But it's a really good movie. It's worth watching for sure. And then I picked My Awkward Sexual Adventure. That's kind of like a romantic comedy.
Oh.
Where this guy, it opens up where he's, it's a weird scene, like where he's on top of his girlfriend, right? And he's like, he's going, and she's like falling asleep. Like he's having sex with her. And she's like falling asleep. Like she has no interest whatsoever. And so he finishes and he rolls off, and it's like she's snoring in the sleep. And the next morning he proposes to her, and she's like, I don't want to marry you. You know, you're, we've been together forever, but I have like no interest in being with you anymore. I think we need to separate. So he goes to Canada and hooks up with a stripper over there. And it's just a romantic comedy where he actually falls in love with that stripper. And then the other girl comes back and decides she wants to be with him again. And it's that, it's tight. It's the kind of cookie cutter stuff you always see, but it was entertaining. And then the third one was a documentary, which caused a big uproar between Daryl and Keith. But, and I didn't want to watch it. I was almost going to pass on it because it's called How to Die in Oregon. And I didn't want to watch it because I was like, I don't want to watch people die. I really don't. I don't want to watch that.
Wait, what's it called?
How to Die in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And what this is about, it's not really about death, like dying of cancer, which I thought it was, but it's about your right to die. Like, if you're terminally ill, it's about your right to say, I've had enough pain, I want to die, mm-hmm. like the Kevorkian thing. And fascinating documentary. It follows many stories. One is a family of a mother, a daughter, a son, and a father, and she gets cancer of the lung, and it's terminal, and she's given 30 days to live. Well, it turns out that she lives another year because she had like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months of like really good time where she could go with her family on vacation and still walk around and not be winded. And it's like the growth was not growing as fast as they predicted and causing bile in the lung and stuff like that. And she had signed the paperwork saying that, yeah, I want my right to die. And what usually this is it's like $1,000 drug. There's other options that are lower. Like if you don't have enough money, there's $300. But the cream of the crop is this drug that's $1,000. And you just kind of, it's like Alka-Seltzer. You dissolve it in water. You drink it. Within minutes, you go into a coma, and then you pass. And it's kind of peaceful. And they showed a couple of things happening where some people did it with just their loved one in the room. Some people did it with their whole entire family, like, in the room. And then she had that signed, like, a long time, but decided not to exercise it because she's feeling well. But eventually she had to because she started to, like, it started to just get huge in her lung and turn into, she almost looked pregnant because all the fluids and stuff that were forming causing an incredible amount of pain. But it was interesting because her son didn't want her to die, and it was just, it's kind of a sad thing. And then you have the other extreme where there's one guy had, God, what is it? It's not pancreatitis. Prostate cancer. he had prostate cancer, terminally predicted to be terminal, and he went to his insurance company. The doctors wanted to do aggressive type of chemotherapy, but the healthcare provider did not want to buy. They didn't want to spend all that extra money to pay for it, and they said, "But we will pay for your right to die with dignity."
Whoa!
Wow!
And this guy is furious. He's like talking to the camera. You say I can die with dignity, but you won't let me fight for my right to live. He says these people should be executed. Well, he actually got it turned around where they said, "Okay, we'll pay for your chemotherapy," because he got the press involved and everything, you know. And they're like, "Oh, we'll spend $1,000 for a pill to kill you, but we won't spend $100,000 to keep you alive." So.
Yeah, that would be a bad precedent.
That was just a sad story. And then the other one was really sad too, because it was about a guy who got brain cancer, and it showed the relationship of a man and woman. I don't think they had kids, but it reminded me a lot of me and Barb, because, you know, their relationship was like close. They did everything together. They were best friends. He got terminal cancer of the brain, and it got so bad. I mean, it got so bad he wanted to die. And he said, "It's not that I don't want to be with you another day. It's just that I can't take the pain, and I'm not myself." He was on so much drugs, he couldn't close his eyes because the tumor in his brain was pushing on his eye sockets, so his eyes were open 24/7. It was horrible. But he said, "Please take me to Oregon so I can die." Well, the doctor said, "You can do that, but to establish residency, you have to be there 1 year." And he says, "You're not going to make it." So he ended up suffering and dying, and he made his wife promise him. He says, "You need to bring this law to Seattle. Please do everything in your power to bring my right to die. You know, people will have the right." So his wife worked for years and finally got that law passed. And that was sad, because it was like, when she got the law passed, she didn't want to live anymore herself, because she's like, you know, my husband's dead. It was really sad. But it opened my eyes, because unlike Micah, and I'm not aware, I try to ignore the surroundings of society and news. Like, I'm not, of the three of us, I'm probably the least knowledgeable about the world around me, other than technical advancements and stuff like that. But if it's news, I don't watch the news. I don't read the paper. I don't even check the internet for news. I only know stuff from when Barb talks to me and stuff like that. So I was even naive to the fact that Oregon even had this thing. You know, I had no idea what it was, but and then you have these religious groups. God,
that's something you don't know about until you need it, right?
Yeah, it's just.
I knew Oregon had it. I didn't know Washington had ended up getting it as
well. Yeah, they have it as well now. And the thing that bothers me about religion is how some people feel they have to get in people's knickers. They don't know the circumstances, and it's not just religion; it's politics. They don't know what a person's going through. They don't know the situation where they're in, and they don't give a shit. All they say is, "You must live." They don't care if you're in constant pain and if you have to take 750 milligrams of morphine every hour on the hour. They don't give a shit about that. And that makes me sad. It really does. I don't know. I learned a lot. So even though Keith picks these crazy-ass pieces of things, I kind of learn from everything that he's picked. Whereas my picks, you don't learn anything. Well, I guess you – in this
Which
one –
Which one was your pick?
Awkward sex life.
Yeah, the awkward sex life.
Okay.
But in that case, you learn how to do cunnilingus with a cantaloupe so you could get it right.
But, I have a hard time believing that's actually going to teach you very much of anything.
It taught you. It showed the cantaloupe how to lick it right.
Yeah, that's a cantaloupe, though.
But I don't know. It was good. It wasn't what I expected when I saw it, and I'm glad I watched it.
It sounds awesome, and it sounds like I will never see that movie.
Oh, How to Die in Oregon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never thought I would see it. Other than I thought, unlike Daryl would just say, I won't watch his movies. I'll at least do my homework.
Oh, you stopped watching them?
Huh? Oh, yeah, he doesn't usually watch Keith's movies. He just can't take it. It was an HBO documentary, and it was really well put together. And then they had another one with the guy with the voice box, but that was a weird... it didn't seem to belong in the documentary. This guy got cancer of the throat. Or they needed to remove his voice box to get rid of the cancer. And this guy, his whole life was based on singing and radio, and he would not let them remove the cancer because he says, you're taking away my livelihood, you're taking away my voice, I'll just pass. So he signed up for the program, but he never could drink it. They had it by his bedside, and he never drank it, so... And then that's one of the things that about these programs is nobody's forcing you. You just go get a prescription, and with two witnesses, you can do this. But now that I brought the show down, what else do we got?
All right. I watched a movie. I did watch a movie the past couple of weeks. It's called Sophie's Revenge. Actually, let me check.
It's called Sophie's Choice.
No.
This is the sequel.
No, Sophie's Revenge. It's a Chinese movie. It's a romantic comedy about a girl who she meets this doctor after she has surgery. Like, he performs surgery on her, and he meets her, and her life seems to be going perfectly. And then he meets another woman that he performs surgery on, who happens to be like a famous singer. So he dumps our hero Sophie for the singer girl or whatever, and so Sophie is distraught because they were already engaged to get married, and like the plans were like in action, and so like she's all like distraught, and this sounds like whatever. So then she goes to make a plan to get him back, or to just have revenge on him, and it works like a generic romantic comedy like in premise, but this movie is weird as shit because Sophie, the main character, is a cartoonist. Like, she's a comic book artist. And so the movie has these parts of the movie where it breaks through reality to a degree. So, like, she walks into her house after she got dumped. And then so she's having these imaginations of, like, she has remembrances of, like, him when he was there. And then, like, sort of these imaginings of what is going to happen. And like one thing is like she remembers him being a jackass, and so then she rips it, like she literally like rips the scene apart like it's paper, and like climbs through the walls or whatever. There are these whole scenes of like just her imagination that just show up kind of at random, and like you know when to expect them because I actually don't know. Just from watching the movie, there's a certain cadence to when, like, imaginations are going to happen. But other than that, like, it's kind of this, like, random event. And it makes the,
Do they have is it, like, musical interludes?
No. Like, she just walks up and then, like, and we can tell because, like, things are either going to go, are going too well or, like, way, like, they're going too well usually. And so if she, like, walks into a scene and good things are happening, then you can tell that she's imagining things. Because then, like, so like, there's a scene where she goes to the hospital, and she gets all like dolled up to look really good to try to impress him to win her back or whatever. And in her head, like she walks over to him, and he's like, "What was I doing? I'm an idiot. I should have never stopped dating you or whatever." And then like, but while she's daydreaming this, like this old man like walks over to her. But when she wakes up from the daydream, like she accidentally knocks the old man over, and so like he's old and about to die, and everybody's freaking out and mad at her for like almost killing this old dude, and so it's really embarrassing. It's an amazing movie. I'm surprised, like, I don't know. I didn't see it coming. I don't even know why I watched it. I know why I watched it, because I was just picking through... I was going through Zhang Ziyi movies. Zhang Ziyi is... she's a Chinese-American actress. She's American now. No, she's just Chinese. But she was in Rush Hour 2. She was, like, random, not saying any words, bad guy in Rush Hour 2. She's been... she was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She's relatively famous on that level. But the movie had a reputation for being just a completely absurdist kind of comedy thing. That's what I was in the mood for. And it lives up to that. Like, it's actually really good. So I don't know how you're going to go watch it, but if you get a chance, I suggest looking out for it.
It's really good. Instant streaming if people have Is Netflix. It?
Sweet. There you go. Like, it's really good. She has these two best friends who are basically like devils and angels on her, like, on her ears. Like, it's a comic book movie. Like, it's just Chinese instead of American, and it's very weird, and I liked it. So yeah, I recommend that.
Subtitles, right?
Absolutely. That's it. That's mostly. I watched like Kamen Rider movie this morning. It's like a Japanese like kids movie. Even though the Kamen Rider movie was like a lot more action packed than I remember most of these kind of like Japanese superhero movies being, like, it has a lot more in common with kung fu movies. Like, the first 15 minutes is just like a really badass kung fu like action movie thing where like there's like 5 minute long like kung fu fights and then like shootouts and like a chase scene where like the people are riding on buses and motorcycles and SUVs and shooting at each other and doing kung fu on top of a car, and then it goes into like superhero La La Land and gets really weird. And he wins today with the power of friendship. But like, so that was strange. But I watched that this morning. And that's basically the only movies I've seen. Claire told me that Mortal Instruments is not terrible, but totally doesn't need to be watched ever. So that just came out in theaters.
Yeah, that one looked too Twilight-y for me, but it might not be. Well, I don't know.
Well, it's not from what she said. It's not actually Twilight-y. It's just being marketed that way, hoping that they can get off some of the Twilight-y buzz.
It's a young adult book, though, right?
Yes, and it's a young adult book in all the ways that, like, every young adult book that gets turned into a movie is basically that. Even though this one apparently has a little less angst than some, it's still not. Whatever. The most killer is that there's all these really good young adult books out there, but the ones that get made into movies are all the ones that suck. They just use the same formula. They use like 90% of the genre is just like the same teenage angst shit.
Any bit angst and you need some kind of vampires or werewolves. And
I wonder what that Percy Jackson movie was any good, because I saw the first one. It wasn't good? You've seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, but I just imagine because it died. Like... Maybe it is good, but no one watched it. No one.
Yeah.
Like, it came and then it left.
It's no Harry Potter, that's for sure.
That's for certain.
I watched one movie that I think we've talked about. Well, I know we've talked about it before. Oblivion with Thomas Cruise.
Oh yes, that guy.
Yeah.
The sci-fi. I liked it. It was good.
I liked it a lot. It was way better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. The one thing I liked is, so it's kind of a mystery, right? They don't tell you what's going on, and it's a big mystery. And I had a lot of questions up front. I'm like, well, why is this doesn't make sense? Why would they do it this way? Or this doesn't make any sense. Why are they doing it that way? And I'm like, God damn it, this is going to suck. But then when they do have the reveal, everything makes sense. So that was cool in that way. So they paid off on all the weird stuff that they set up early.
The one thing that I guess I had a little bit of a confusion on, and man, I've seen this about a year ago. God, it's at the theaters about a year ago. It seems like it, but it was probably January, maybe. Or, yeah.
That might have been like March-ish almost.
Might have been like March. It seems like an eternity since I've seen it. But I remember being slightly confused about the space shuttle scene when they're going back to that.
April, dude. April.
Wow, that goes back to show how my memory. I'm 44 years old.
It's like a year ago.
When you read 50 comics a week or 40 comics a week, it kind of turns everything into a blur.
Dude, I'm 27 and I have no idea how, like, what happened 2 months ago. Talk about movies. Like, I don't understand anyone ever does, like, unless you have a database, how you can do, like, best of a year thing, because I don't know what came out, like, 2 months ago. I can't imagine, like, in December being like,
yeah,
I saw a movie in January that was really good.
I watched two movies while I was... I bagged and boarded 500 comic books the other day.
Woo!
Well, I got off early on Friday. I came home and our living room still looks like crap. But Barb wants me to get some of the boxes out. So in order to get the boxes out, I needed to bag some boxes. And while I do that, I was like, I'm going to watch some movies that I don't have to... that I can have on the background and just watch. And I revisited two movies that I've watched a long, long, long time ago. The Crow with Brandon Lee. And I still like that movie. That movie is pretty freaking awesome. I remember like lines in it. I probably have seen it about five times, but I remember a lot of lines in it. And I remember everything distinctively. And then I watched Toxic Avenger 3. And I remember liking Toxic Avenger, but damn, this movie was bad. Like, it got worse as it started off pretty good, like where I was enjoying the campiness of it. And then once we hit the midway point, I was like, God, I can hardly wait till this ends.
Doesn't hold up, huh?
No.
Probably never did.
Well, at one time it did. Like, I was a big Troma buff in high school. Like, I would watch Class of Nukem High. I'd watch all the Toxic Avenger movies. I'd watch Tromeo and Juliet. I'd watch all that stuff. And now it really doesn't hold up for me.
Well, you're not in high school anymore, so.
Yeah.
Your perspective has changed. Plus, you've seen a lot more stuff since then.
Yeah. And I like campy and stuff. It just, maybe that one's just really bad. If they had the first one, I probably would have liked it a lot more.
Yeah. Well, sequels are never as good as the first ones.
I disagree.
I'm just kidding.
You want me to give you a whole list of it?
Yes, please. We need a list again this time. We don't believe you.
Look at Percy Jackson. Perfect example.
Superman 2. Rocky 2.
Wasn't that the same movie?
Empire Strikes Back.
I don't think Rocky 2 is better than Rocky 1.
Oh, I do.
What about Rambo? 1 was better.
I don't remember Rambo 2, so I'd have to say 1 is better. And I remember Rambo 3 was like in the Middle East, and that was not too good.
Yeah, Rambo 4 was on the moon, I think.
No, wasn't Rambo 4 in the jungle, and then like they just had a Gatling gun, and they just blew people's
bodies. Oh, yeah, that's bits. What. Yeah, I remember that.
That was gross.
I don't know. There's a lot of sequels I like. Spider-Man 2, I like that one a lot.
Are you ready for the next Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, sure. Any comic movie I'm ready for.
Very funny.
Bring it.
I hope 10 years from now we get Amazing Spider-Man 2 again.
I hope as long as I'm alive, I keep getting comic movies at the frequency that I'm getting them.
Yeah, you wonder if that's going to die at some point.
I mean, like, it has to, but...
I think the genre lends itself to... Like, even if you do movies like Two Gun or Red, right?
Well, technology has caught up to the concept now, so...
I'm just wondering if we're just in a phase.
Well, I think the superhero genre is definitely in a phase, and I think that phase will drop out. I think comic book adaptations will always happen. You know,
because we'll adapt from anything, from movies. I'm just curious, it's like, but outside of superheroes, what do we have in comics that can sell $200 million stuff? That's what I'm thinking, like.
Right.
Outside of superheroes, probably not. But like, I think 300 did well because they're making a sequel, and we're getting that this year. I think Red did good. It warranted a sequel, but it didn't do. The sequel didn't do what the prime one did.
We're done with that.
Kick-Ass 2. That's another movie I watched. That was really good. I really liked that movie. It is the one case in comics where I can really say that the movie's better than the comic. Because the movie, I mean, I think it adds a sense of humor and it lowers the violence quotient, and the kids seem a little bit older than they do in the book. When they're in the book, she looks like 2 feet tall. You know,
she looks about 6 in the book.
It just every choice that they made for the movie to tone it down, like in the rape scenes and all that stuff, was the right choice. Because in the comic book, I was like, God, I actually saw the movie before I read Kick-Ass 2, the comic book, and I was like, man, this book is violent. I mean,
I heard people didn't like it when it came out. I heard that some people were not.
I still liked it, but there were some scenes in there where it made me feel really uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I saw the movie, I was not really uncomfortable. Like, there's that rape scene, and then there's a scene with the dog where in the comic book, they cut, and you know how much I love dogs, so you're.
Yep.
They cut the dog's head off.
Oh, no.
And then they put it on the superhero, and I was like, oh, my God. But in the movie,
that's stolen straight out of Game of Thrones.
What they do is that one guy from Superbad, right? He's the bad guy. His name is Motherfucker. But what he ends up doing is killing the guy but leaving his dog alive, because they were like, well, do you want us to kill the dog? And they go, well, how evil do you think I am? I'm not going to kill the dog. And I was like, whew.
They said, that would be a cheap storytelling ploy. I wouldn't do that.
And Kick-Ass 2 didn't do well at the box office, but it's close to what
its budget was.
What its budget was, because it was like only $28 million to make.
Right, they didn't need to make $200 million off it.
So yeah, they don't need to make it. They need to like try to match it and then hope that it's successful in cable and, you know, instant streaming and DVDs. And then you're good. And then maybe we'll get the next one. But yeah.
I am afraid of diminishing returns on that model to some degree.
I don't know. That girl that plays Hit Girl, to me, is phenomenal. I mean,
she's awesome.
She, even now, she's like so much older. It just seems like from the first movie to the second movie, like she aged a lot. But she's just, she fits that part so good. And I think she's a good actress for that particular role. I don't know how she'd do in other roles. But
she's awesome in that horror, that vampire movie.
Which one?
Let them in. Let me in.
The American one.
Yeah.
She's a good actress. I from what I've seen, I enjoy. And today, I think we're gonna go see the Millers, the Miller movie. If anything, it'll be somewhat funny, I hope.
You would hope for a comedy. I had no idea what it was. I had never seen any trailers for it or anything until after it came out.
Yeah. Well, there's one other comic I wanted to push, and I forgot totally about it. And it's an unusual one, because I'm pushing it because of the paper. I just love that Image is publishing Ted McKeever's Miniature Jesus in this paper quality and this size. It's phenomenal. I don't understand what the fuck is going on. I can't explain to you what's going on. It's about a drunk, a miniature Jesus, and a cat and a demon, and that's about all I can tell you. But I sure do enjoy it. The other one that they try to do this paper quality with is a book called I Love Trouble by Kel Simons and Mark A. Robinson. about a girl that develops superpowers during a plane crash. And she is a troublemaker. In other words, she's has no good bone in her body to do just. But it is a good book. And this is a book that the story is for me personally, is kind of mediocre. But the art and the paper are like so good that I love it. So that's weird. I am so for this movement to move away from glossy paper. this paper just makes art thousands of times better.
I'm trying to remember if I read I Love Trouble.
I read this.
Pretty sure I did read it. I don't think I liked it.
So I read one. I got a second printing. I read digitally number 2, and then I picked up 3 and 4, and then 5 and 6. And I think 6 is the last issue. So I still got to read 5 and 6. But I like it a lot. The art is really, really good.
Yeah, I think I like the art.
For me, it's like so good that I could sit and look at the pages over and over again and like it. And it's usually story for me, but in rare cases, I could just look at art all day long. It's kind of like that movie Jumper. She has the ability to teleport short distances, and then as she grows her powers, she can teleport long distances. So it's very much like Jumper, and even in Jumper, he's like jumping into safes and taking money. Well, she does the similar thing. So pretty cool. I think that's all I had, guys. I have no more movies.
Neither do I. When does TV start?
September.
Hey, wait, can you do me a favor and tell me what that Batman animated show is called?
The new Beware the Batman?
That's why I couldn't find it on my DVR.
Yeah, it's Beware the Batman. Oh, I've seen more of that now, by the way. In episode 5, maybe, I think, by now. And I still don't know if I like it or not. Like, I'm still, like, it's...
Yeah, I wanted to record it and see what it's like. But I typed the way my search one sucks. Like, if I type Batman, it would find everything. Like,
right.
It was smart enough, but this DVR, you have to have the first word right.
Wow, that sucks.
So you have to type... I just didn't know it was Beware. I typed Batman, and it didn't find it. And I did put one for Teen Titans Go, because I heard it's pretty funny, so I'll check it out.
I didn't like Teen Titans Go. I thought it was too long. Like, I love the Teen Titans Go skits that were in the DC Nation stuff. I felt like Teen Titans Go, the cartoon, is 30 minutes is too much. 15 is too... Well, it's 15. 15 per thing. I think 15 is a bit much for me personally. But yeah.
Help!
Help yourself.
Well, have a good day off, everybody.
All right, yes.
Are you going to eat anything good today?
I mean, I hope so.
I don't know what we're doing, but we'll probably get something to eat.
I'm going to eat leftover Chinese for lunch.
Mm-hmm. That's what I had for breakfast this morning. And we had, there's a restaurant in Mooresville, which is where my grandmother lives. It's called Porta Pit. I have no idea, like, it's a really strange name or whatever. But the church that she goes to was having, like, this, like, dinner or what have you. And so, we got, like, it's a thing where they just bring plates or whatever. It's a bizarre thing that they do. But anyway, I got some food yesterday, and I was surprised at how good it is. Like, the chicken from there, it's, like, roasted chicken until you get, like, leg quarters of it. You get, leg and thigh quarters. I picked up the chicken leg, and I put it in my mouth, and as my teeth hit it, like, the entire piece of meat just came off the bone. Like, literally the whole thing just fell right off of the bone, and it was amazing. It was as good a chicken as I've had in a while. It was really impressive. And it came with a little cute piece of cake. The cake wasn't very good, but I'm a snob when it comes to baked goods these days. So.
You're spoiled.
I am spoiled. The thing about being spoiled is that, like... It's hard, especially for me, because I'm a terrible liar. I am one of the worst liars on the planet. especially when it comes to food, because I don't have face control. And so, like, I put food in my mouth, and I make faces, even if I like it. Like, if it's a new thing to me, or something if I'm, like, not ready for it, like, I make a face.
You're very expressive.
Yes, when I'm eating. And people were just like, oh, you hated it. Like, no, I didn't actually hate this one. I just didn't know what to expect, and it was really weird. But I am a... So at work, sometimes people will make food, and they'll bring in a cake or something. Like, there's two guys that I work with. Their mom owns, like, a little bakery, right? And they bring in food from her all the time. And I'm like, how is she in business? Because this shit sucks. And every time I eat a piece of cake from them, I, like, have to fight not to, like, make my, like, this is stale shit cake. So, yeah. That's that.
So you don't... Do you say something?
No. My goodness, no.
It's all in the facial expression, like Judge Dredd then.
Very, very much
you're,
so.
You're wearing the helmet, and you can just see the mouth just drop. Yep. And the chewing get, like, longer.
And then I quickly put it on somebody else's plate and walk away.
I ate wings yesterday. Hot wings. I had Desert Heat, mango habanero, and hot.
Nice.
I gotta start eating less.
No. I mean, because there is, like, if people don't know, I just don't believe that dieting works. Like, well, not that I don't believe it. Like, there actually is proof that, like, dieting as a concept is actually a terrible idea, because artificially restricting yourself on what you can and cannot eat ends up creating a thing mentally where you end up rebelling at it, and you end up yo-yoing yourself because you only do the diet for a few months, and afterwards, in order, because you couldn't eat it, like, for an artificial reason, you go back and destroy yourself or whatever. But there is this, like, chain of thought. I read a book about it. It was interesting. Where actually, if you don't, it's hard to do because we've built ourselves up with, like, mental limits on what we can and can't eat for so long. But if you can find a way to not give yourself any limit on what you can eat, right? So, like, if you decide that you want to eat 3 cakes today, you go ahead and eat 3 cakes today, right? And over the course of the rest of your life, you'll actually, your body will balance itself out, and you'll end up eating healthier just because your body doesn't want to have 3 cakes. Like, you think you do, and the first time you do it, you will. But, like, by month 7, you're like, you know what? Fuck that cake. I don't need that in my life. And if you just eat whatever you want whenever you want to, your body will tell you that, like, hey, you need more salt on your diet, or you need less salt on your diet, and you need this. And then you'll have cravings for those things. You'll eat them, and you'll be happy.
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily change what I'm eating, but I do want to eat less. In other words, if you eat fast, your body doesn't realize that you've had enough. Yet. So if you're stuffing your face, like, so my goal is to eat slower and try to let it digest a little bit before I determine, oh, I want more.
Right.
It's also good to take portions rather than just open a bag of chips and sit down and
It's always good to pour out food onto a plate before you just go in there hog wild with it.
Then you, at least if your stomach or if your brain hasn't caught up to how much you've eaten,
your laziness will. You'll be like, yeah, you know what? I want more, but god dang, it's all the way in the other room.
My bowl's empty, and I have to get up.
I'm just gonna sit here longer. I'm watching TV. I'm gonna play video games. I'm not gonna move. Actually, that works for me. A surprising amount.
Does work.
Actually, it works in a negative way sometimes because I'll be hungry. Like, I'll be actually hungry, and I'm just like, damn, I just don't want to go to the kitchen. And eventually I do, and I'm so hungry, I just eat the entire fridge.
It's the lazy diet. Put your food far away from you.
Only have small handfuls of food that you can get, so you have to get up and walk to the kitchen every time. That'd be awful. Don't do that, guys. It's a terrible idea.
All right. Well, I think we can wrap this one up. You guys have a good...
Labor Day.
Labor Day. Hopefully you don't have to work. Do you get the day off, Micah?
I do get the day off. I didn't even know I got the day off because we don't get certain holidays that other people get off. And so I was surprised we got Labor Day off. But we do. I'm excited about this.
Yes. It's good to be recording on a Sunday and know you have the day off tomorrow.
Yeah, like I'm done and I have the whole rest of the day to do stuff and I have tomorrow. I don't have to like that mental stress of like Sunday sometimes, it's really a hassle.
Yes, mental stress on Sunday usually happens around 7 p.m. for me. And that's when I start thinking about Monday.
The stuff you have to
but
do.
But I'm pretty good about detaching all day Sunday. I mean, all day Saturday.
Right.
And Friday night. It's just that last piece of Sunday where my brain goes into like work mode. Except in the middle of the night, I can't control that. 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm always problem solving. I'm always waking up in the middle of the night. But then I just read some comics and I'm back in bed in no time. So this has been Geek Brunch, episode 189 or 90. I don't believe Bill, but it's 189. It could be 189. And you can reach us on Twitter at @do_what at DBM00.
Brain fart
there. Geek Brunch. And we have a Facebook page. Go to Geek Brunch Space Podcast and type the or click the like button and follow us there. And we have a forum for geeks, and we have topic threads there. I'm still tracking my weekly reads and all the movies I watch too on that thread, and that's how I'm tracking the movies, Micah.
But I have to do it.
I can't compare them. Like it's easier to compare by week than it is by the whole year. So I just keep the weekly thread adding to it.
Yeah, but if you want to do your top of the year, you can just look at anything you give a 5 out of 5 to. And then
distinguish from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this week, I had a – let's see how many comics. I'm still under my – I've read 34 comics. I only have 1 5 out of 5 and a bunch of 4 out of 5s. And it was hard to rank them because there was a lot of good ones that I read that were kind of like equal. But I did the best I could. I'm finding out I'm not caring for Godzilla anymore because after reading 2 years worth of Godzilla, it seems like I'm reading the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And lately they've been focusing on the monsters, and I like them when they focus more on the human condition, like Walking Dead.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do with a monster that doesn't talk, right?
That's the monsters fighting and stuff. It's not that interesting to me, but it's more of how the monster's affecting the people that's more interesting. And it seems like lately, in the last 2 series, they've been focusing on just the monsters, and I don't really care. But I still enjoy it at some point, but I'm starting to try to think about those books that are in the 3 to 5 range of, like, I need to cut down because I average about 42 books a week.
Mm-hmm.
But I buy 200, so the math doesn't add up.
So, just a little.
I'm falling short about 40 books. Well, about 30 books a month, where I'm adding 30 more, and that doesn't include the back issues. But I'm adding 30 books more to read that I'm not reading because I can't. I don't have enough time. And I don't think I'll ever have enough time because I've trended this since the beginning of the year and I've only had maybe 2 weeks where I did over 50. And that means I'll never catch up. That's what that means. Mm-hmm. That tells me I need to cut 40 books. But then Image publishes 12 number one.
And you'll like at least 9 of them. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good one. And I'll get this episode before I leave for Baltimore out, probably Thursday.
Have fun in Baltimore. Wish I was there.
Oh, I will. It's the fastest con I ever go to because it's like I get there Friday and leave Monday, but it's still pretty damn cool. It's almost like its format is like a mirror of Heroes. Like it's just a little bit smaller in size, but it's just as packed. Well, Heroes was nice this year because we had room to move, right,
Mike? Yeah, this year was awesome. I don't know what they did, but like,
I think they had the same attendance, but they added another
think they had more space.
Square footage, and it made the aisles like really walkable. And I've heard that some people like that sell stuff don't like it because it. I don't know if it makes it look more so people don't walk around as much. I don't know, but
I don't give a fuck about them
personally. I don't give a shit. I like to shop, and I don't like elbow to elbow shopping. You know, I like when I can spread out and look
around
and look at all the art without feeling pressure to have to move. And that's the kind of shopping I like to do. So I'll talk to you guys later. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, you
too. Bye.
My favorite song, Across the Universe. La 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 la.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Chain.